Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Dirt Stories. I'm your host, Jennifer Cote, and today I am absolutely thrilled to introduce you to Kevin Goldberg. In today's episode, Kevin is going to share his dirt story, which is more focused around dirt than most of our past guests. Kevin graduated with a degree from environmental engineering, but soon found himself co-founding a software company to help solve one of the biggest challenges in the construction industry: moving, tracking, and testing dirt. Kevin is joining us today to share his story, to explain what his company, Soil Flow, does, and why he loves soil more than maybe anybody else out there. So settle in, get prepared to be pumped up about soil, and let's dig in. Thank you so much for reaching out. You're the first person to actually ever email dirtstories@dozer.com to be like, I'd love to be a guest. So for me, that was a huge win. I was so pumped about that. You totally made my day. So thank you for reaching out. I'm really, really looking forward to diving into this topic with you. I don't know a lot about like soil and dirt and soil management and why it matters. So I've been really looking forward to this conversation. Thanks again, Kevin, for joining me today. I am so intrigued. I want to know all about you and like, how did you get to this point where you started a soil management company?
Well, it's a little bit of a long story. So as you know, or you're going to learn, Soil Flow is a software as a service actually for earth movers in the construction mm-hmm. space. Our clients range from contractors on the ground to environmental consultants, actual project owners, and then fill sites as well, which we can get into what is a fill site and where do they come from. But basically what happened is I graduated as an environmental engineer and I was working on major pipeline projects, kind of the Trans-Canada and Enbridge projects, just as a junior environmental engineer in training there. And one of the requirements was to comply to what was at the time these best management practices of managing excess soil in Ontario. And what it entailed was, you know, better sampling and what we call characterization of the quality of soil, and then tracking it from point A to point B and having this full chain of custody tracking. And what that means is we had to know from point A of where the soil is coming from, you know, the quality of it, who was watching it being loaded into the truck, all the way to point B, where it was being finally deposited actually as what we call beneficial reuse. We were reusing the soil to rehabilitate an abandoned quarry, and we had to track all of that information. And the way of doing it back then, and it's still prevalent in the industry today, was through these paper tickets. And what happens is when you look at big urban areas like, you know, the greater Toronto area, you know, even in Waterloo and, you know, London and all throughout Ontario and actually all throughout the world, we displace a huge amount of soil for construction, whether it's condo digs, whether it is infrastructure projects. We are digging millions and millions of truckloads and cubic meters of soil which need to go somewhere. So because there's more supply than there is places to put it, it costs a lot of money to put your soil in these abandoned pits and quarries, redevelopment sites. And over time, the cost of soil disposal has gone up and the length that you have to bring it to, how far you have to travel has gone up as well, leading to increasing costs. So now we have these people who have these holes in the ground that want to fill them, or they have redevelopment sites, and they actually get to charge these generators a tipping fee to bring the soil there. So if you have a truckload of soil, it could cost you between $50 to $100 to dump it in that hole over there.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, Jen, if you had, you know, 100 loads of soil and you said, Kevin, I want to bring you that soil to your abandoned pit, I would say, okay, great. I'm charging you $100 per truckload for that soil. you know, that would cost you $10,000. If the math is right, you write me a $10,000 check. And back then, I would give you 100 paper tickets. And with these 100 paper tickets that are kind of perforated in two areas, me and these other engineers on the project would spend hours and hours trying to reconcile the outbound trucking logs with these tickets that we would hand to the truck drivers, where we would tear off our piece of that ticket. The truck driver would drive it to the fill site. The truck driver would tear off their piece of the ticket. Fill site would sign off, write the time that the truck arrived, and somehow we had to get that information back to the source site and create a truck log that was somewhat accurate in a timely manner to catch any issues or mistakes or improper disposal of that soil.
Yeah, I could imagine how there would be maybe just like one or two loopholes of where things could go wrong in that process.
Yeah, and you know, not only loopholes and where things could go wrong, but you know, as with any industry, a very small percentage of the industry can do a lot of damage. And there was illegal dumping that was happening because, you know, there were areas to cut corners on contaminated soil disposal. And as a result, it really put the industry in a bad light. And therefore, we saw the beginnings of a soil regulation start in really in 2012 is when that started. So doing all of that and working there, you know, must be a better way. Why is there paper? What's going on these construction sites? You know, fresh out of school, where's all the technology that you promised as a kind of engineer? And we went out and built the prototype. From there, we tested it on a few projects, eventually spun it out into its own company, and SoilFlow was born.
That is a hell of a story. Did you have like a technological background at all before this? Or did you just like, were you more in the mindset of that there should be like a software solution for this? And then you tried to find somebody that you could work with to build it.
Yeah, so my background was environmental engineering. Yeah. In terms of a technical background, you know, I was always interested in the startup space, in, you know, being an entrepreneur. That's kind of where my interest took me. I had no idea kind of how it would take shape and where it would go from there, but it was kind of just this natural evolution of it. And then my co-founder is actually, I went to school with him, and he is a mechatronics engineering graduate, which is basically a robotics engineer, and also a business school grad as well. So a great partner there. And then, you know, the first version was outsourced. And now at this point, you know, we've kind of hit our stride, as you kind of said earlier, and we brought development in-house, and we just launched SoilFlow 2.0 on January 1st, right in time for the soil regulations.
That's so exciting. That's awesome. So why soil for you? Was it just that there was this problem that you were seeing and you were like, there has to be a better way? Or was soil always kind of something that you were interested in?
No, it's funny. Soil, you know, until I kind of had that first job, I didn't really know anything about soil at all. You know, I was an environmental engineer. What I find is most of the environmental engineering courses are focused on air quality and water quality. There were some, you know, points that we touched on soil quality, but really everything I've learned has been from being in the industry over time and, you know, talking to much more experienced people than me, you know, taking their feedback to heart and really just building on that and kind of being involved in the regulations and with the Ministry of Environment.
Right. And you said that there were new regulations that were put in place January 1st. What were those changes?
Yeah, so they were pretty significant. So it's Ontario Regulation 40619, if anyone is trying to Google it. But it's a three-phased implementation. We saw the first phase on January 1st. The most important thing to note about kind of this first phase is that it's put all of the liability of soil disposal on the project leader or the owner of a project. So traditionally, when a developer would go and look at a development, they would say, you know, here's my pro forma. This is what it's going to cost. You know, they know that windows are a certain price. They know the cost of labor, the cost of cement. They know everything about putting the building up. Mm-hmm. And when it gets to their pro forma portion of the excavation and disposal of it, when you get to the dirt, it's one line item. They say it's going to be, you know, $10 million, $5 million, whatever it's going to be. And, you know, that's it. And it's in the contractor's hands. I don't care what they do with the soil. They can deal with it however they want. Get it off my site so I can get to my footings and I can start building my building up. This regulation has really made it so the owner has to care now, because if soil is improperly disposed of now, the ministry is going to come knocking at that developer's door or the infrastructure project owner's door. They're going to be the one who is going to be fined. They're going to be the one who has the work order to remove the improperly disposed soil. And it's really going to be their headache. Right? So that's what we see on January 1st, 2021. That's in effect right now. January 1st, 2022, we have new sampling criteria. We need more, better sampling plans and analysis of that soil, so we have a better idea of what's in it. And, you know, another huge aspect, and most importantly for us, is that every single load of soil on any project is going to have to be tracked and registered onto a public registry, which is going to be made by the Ministry of Environment. So that's really where soil flow comes in and providing that solution for the tracking aspect of these new regulations.
Right. Why is regulation or sampling? What is it that they're looking for? Why does that matter? And how does it play into the environmental aspect of construction?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's look at, I mean, honestly, Waterloo is a great example of it, right? So we have areas in Waterloo, and I mean, of course, Toronto as well, where we went through the Industrial Revolution. We went through the developments of these cities, you know, 100 years ago to today. We were building factories, we had brick factories, we had quarries, we had metal fabrication, you know, manufacturing, right? We were huge in manufacturing. Yeah. And what happened there is we didn't have these environmental controls that we have today, and we would pollute the soil beneath us, and we would, you know, put heavy metals in it. We would put hydrocarbons. We'd have leaky storage tanks with chemicals, and you end up with what we call now a brownfield, and that is contaminated soil. So what's happening is as our cities grow, and as we kind of, our suburbs start to turn into these industrialized areas, you know, in Waterloo or in Toronto, and we move outwards towards the Junction area, Stockyards in Toronto, where we used to have factories, and we want to build buildings, we want to build underground parking lots there. So we go and we dig down and we excavate that soil. But if that soil ends up on a farm at a groundwater table, then those contaminants are going to leak into the groundwater and get into people's drinking water and actually make people sick, right? So it's actually an enormous environmental concern, improper soil disposal and contaminated soil disposal on clean lands, because one, we're ruining important resources, which is soil. And every year we're learning how important soil is for the environment. Yeah. For a variety of reasons. And then, of course, we don't want to contaminate people's groundwater wells.
Right. I think it's like a full circle of the impact of construction and how it just plays out in all aspects of surrounding communities that I don't think it's ever really been connected up until this point. So it's interesting that it started to see this shift of like the ecosystem of environments and how construction affects everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And bringing it one step further, you know, one of the biggest things we do and one of the things we're most proud of is rehabilitation of pits and quarries. So in Ontario, I think it is right now, there's about 3,000 completely abandoned pits and quarries. So again, through building our cities, we need the aggregate, of course, for the cement. We need the granular for our roadway bedding. You know, we're building up and we're building across. And the way we do that is we mine out these pits and quarries in our suburb areas, you know, Caledon, for example, Stouffville, areas that have good, you know, geologic formations for this aggregate. And what we're doing now is as we dig down, we're bringing that soil back to these pits and quarries, which are a liability for so many reasons. I mean, they're a safety concern in many cases. Yeah. And in other cases, you know, they're an environmental disaster where there should be, you know, parklands or another great use for it. And we're bringing the soil back and we're rehabilitating it and we're filling that hole back up. We're planting trees and we're making them into beautiful parklands. And, you know, SoilFlow is really proud to be a part of many of those projects going on right now.
That's very cool. Have you completed any of these rehabilitation projects or anything yet?
So, you know, first, it's our customers' rehabilitation projects. So I think there are some that have been completed on the soil import side of things. You know, we got in any of those ones, we got in later in the rehabilitation stage is the truth, because, you know, we're talking about, you know, hundreds of thousands of truckloads to bring in order to rehabilitate right. them.
That's like interesting though, with the role of SoilFlow in that you kind of, it's like you peep in and out of all of these projects at different yeah. times as you're needed. So are there like some top projects for you that stand out that SoilFlow has been a part of or that you've been connected with?
For sure. I mean, we love the projects we're on. Many, many areas we just go on, take a peek, mostly because we're interested. So
right.
One of the first projects we were on was actually the Eglinton Crosstown in Toronto. So it's hard for many startups to say that one of the first projects they're on was a $12 billion major infrastructure yeah. project, you know, changing the way the city really moves. So that's one, you know, that I'll always kind of have an affinity towards the people who kind of use SoilFlow there for the first time, gave us that feedback to develop it. And I have the pleasure of sitting in the Eglinton Crosstown traffic almost every single day because I live around the corner from it. But, you know, since then, you know, now we're also on the Finch West LRT that they're building, and we're on the Here Ontario LRT. And we hope to be on many of the other ones that are coming through kind of Metrolinx and Infrastructure Ontario. And another one that we're really, really proud of to be on and excited to be on is the Toronto Portlands Rehabilitation, which is an enormous soil undertaking, millions of cubic meters of, you know, rehabilitating contaminated soil, reusing soil on site. And it's really quite an amazing one that I think is also really going to change Toronto as we know it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look that up because I don't know a lot of, I haven't even heard of that project before. And it sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it got a lot of attention. That's where, you know, Alphabet wanted to build their smart city.
Yeah.
Before, you know, everything kind of blew up there. But what I was saying is everyone was talking about building the city up and no one was paying any attention to all of the incredible work that everyone was doing and getting that site ready for the developers to build on it.
Yeah. Do you know what the process is of taking contaminants out of soil? If you do these tests and you find that it's not compliant with regulations, does SoilFlow have partners with places that will clean it to order it to be used, or what happens to that contaminated soil?
Yeah, it's a great question. So there's a few players out there. So there's two ways to decontaminate soil, depending on the type of soil it is. One is called in situ, meaning in the earth, and the other one's ex situ, out of the earth. The in situ ones are really the most advanced techniques that are really, they're cutting edge right now. Every single year, there's new developments in it. And there are people in Toronto and in Ontario who are actually leading the charge globally when it comes to rehabilitating and remediating soil. Those range from injecting like microscopic bugs into the soil to actually eat up the oils and the hydrocarbons. If it comes to heavy metals, they do something called stabilization, which basically encapsulates those heavy metals so they can't leach out of the soil and they just kind of stay there inert. And then we have these contaminated transfer stations as well, where you can bring your contaminated soil and they'll also do some form of biologic remediation with bugs, or they have heating pads, which essentially just burn the oil out of the soil. So they go on those heating pads and they burn them out there.
That is so cool. I'm going to have to look up these bugs now.
It's pretty cool stuff. I think it's a little underrated, but I'm also a bit of a soil nerd, so I'm not sure what others find interesting.
Yeah. Now that soil is becoming more of a priority for, like you were saying before, business managers, project managers, and contractors, do you find that they're generally interested in like hearing about this stuff, or are they kind of pushing back a little bit on having to take that ownership? What's the general consensus that you find from your side of things?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it really, it depends on the person on the other side of the table. It depends on where their business is at. It depends on where their career is at as well. If it's at the tail end, if it's at the earlier stages, you know, how much time is left in needing to worry about this stuff. But yeah. I've been very impressed by the development world in the way that they've kind of taken handle of this regulation once they learn it, I should say that. So, you know, there definitely needs to be more education that this regulation is out there. But I think they're starting to see that there's tremendous opportunities for collaboration between project owners and reusing soil between them, as well as, you know, room for improvement in their own operations and room for cost savings in their own operations and, you know, managing their soil in a smarter way. And, you know, soil flow is kind of, we talk about better earthworks management through electronic tracking. And, you know, we're not just tracking the trucks from point A to point B. With soil flow, our customers are doing what's called site delineation of their site. So they know, okay, we have a contaminated pocket of soil in this area of the property. We're going to delineate that on soil flow and track the contractor as they excavate our site so we can make sure that they're optimizing the beneficial reuse of the clean material. So they're sending all of the clean material to the closest possible spot. Maybe it's a development up the road which needs soil to raise the elevation. And then as they kind of zero in towards that contaminated soil, you know, the environmental consultant can come in and say, yes, you're in the contaminated now. We're going to have to send that off to the contaminated facility or landfill or whatever it might be.
And you can do all that with the technology created with soil flow.
Yep, absolutely.
That's so cool. I think that the advancements in construction tech over the past, like even 5 years, every time I talk to somebody about, you know, things that they've created, software they've created, I'm just astounded with what you can do with the power of technology.
You know, it all goes hand in hand with the developments of technology in general, as well as mindset. So even being able to deploy a product on an iPhone, you know, 10 rather than an iPhone 6, you know, makes an enormous difference for us as software developers, right?
Yeah.
So having that technology and also knowing that 100% of the people I'm going to talk to on site or in the office have a smartphone, because there are only smartphones now, is also hugely important for our implementation, right? And
yeah.
To bring it one step further, even the software languages are changing now. So SoilFlow uses, you know, a brand new software language, state of the art, which allows us to be more efficient with it. It allows us to develop more in a more flexible way and to create products faster.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, the introduction of like a smartphone onto construction sites has changed so much. And just like the capabilities of contractors to own things in the moment.
100%. And then, you know, the last thing, and, you know, Dozer might see this a lot as well, is we're seeing a generational shift in construction firms as well, where, you know, it is that next generation kind of taking over or having a bigger voice in these companies, where they're able to influence technology right at the top level and kind of have that change within the organization, which is also so important.
Yeah, totally. And I think it can adjust the entire feelings on construction sites and in teams about the use of technology, you know, and I think another big difference too is the creation of technology specific for the construction industry. We talk about this a lot at Dozer when we're trying to problem solve for the rental industry, but there's a lot of technology out there that
has tried to be pulled into the industry because it's supposed to be helpful, but the needs and uses within the construction industry is so unique that it doesn't always apply. And then it just causes more problems than it does solutions.
Yeah, definitely. One of our, we have a customer, they're an enormous earth mover in the GTA. They have 25 different crews. And, you know, when they used our technology for the first time, they're like, this is the only off the shelf product that we've used that is actually designed exactly what we need it for. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at soil flow and like, it is an extremely niche product, right? Like we're talking about, you know, the tracking and ticketing of excavated soil specifically right now, right? Mm-hmm. So exactly like you said, we're not trying to retrofit our technology that was built for something else and put it into this application. It was built exactly for this application. And because of that, you know, the implementation has been tremendously successful.
Yeah, I like that word, the use of like the niche word. Because the construction industry is a niche. And within that, there's like all of these sub niches that are very specific, and you can't often cross apply technology on like a broad range. Were you super involved in the construction industry before you started developing soil flow? Like, what's the connection for you from environmental engineering to construction?
Yeah, so I mean, I just had that first job out of school and then kind of jumped right into this, to be totally honest with you. Mm-hmm. So everything I've learned from my industry peers. This goes back to a general, you know, theme that we see in the construction industry, where it's the construction team versus the environmental team. Mm-hmm. And it seems that we so often pull up on sites and you have these two siloed teams who are just constantly battling each other. Oh, we want to move the soil tomorrow. You can't move it tomorrow. We haven't tested it. Oh, the environmental team, they're not letting me move my dirt. They're holding me up. It's their fault that I'm having these delays, right? Mm-hmm. And we kind of pride ourselves, and we talk about it a lot, where we kind of help construction teams and environmental teams, you know, work together on a single platform that's adding value to both of them and allowing them to collaborate and do things quicker rather than having them chase each other down for different deliverables and different information that they need. So, you know, I view environmental engineering as construction, and I view construction, you know, as environmental.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good mindset to have. I never thought of that about like the two different silos, but that makes a lot of sense. Have you found that that's been something that you've been trying to take on with soil flow, is to challenge that perception?
I think indirectly in many cases. You know, some teams are definitely better than others, and it depends on the projects. But, you know, environmental is something that construction teams just can't ignore anymore. In every major bid document that a construction team looks at, it'll have an enormous section on environmental regulations of all aspects, water discharge and quality, soil quality, air emissions, dust and noise. You know, these are all environmental factors that, you know, are hugely important in today's world. So I think everyone is just getting used to it, and it is becoming the new normal. And I don't think it's something, you know, we outright say, hey, you guys start working better together, but it is something we do hope we accomplish.
Yeah, for sure. What's been one of the maybe most interesting things that you've learned about construction specifically since you kind of started being more involved in the industry?
Wow, that's a big question. One of the most interesting things I've learned about it since I've been in the industry.
I'll let you pick like two if you have two top ones.
No, I think to me what's so interesting is how every single part of construction and the work site is actually connected. From like what I said, the environmental and the construction, to actually the financing and the insurance, and that also being related back to the environmental. Mm-hmm. So all of these pillars kind of have to be able to kind of carry their own weight. And if any of them crumble at any time, then it can be catastrophic to the project and moving forward. Even, you know, we're talking about condo digs downtown where you know, you have to sell, let's say, 10% of the condos if you want to start an excavation, and you can't get your next tranche of financing until the excavation is done. But then halfway through excavation, condos stop selling because the market crashes, or, you know, that condo doesn't sell, whatever it is. And then suddenly that excavator can't get paid and the job is suddenly over and bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, seeing things like that to me really just show the importance of everyone carrying their own weight, doing what they need to do and not holding up that project.
Yeah. Has any of your preconceived perceptions of the industry changed since you've become more involved with it?
I'm trying to think of what my preconceived conceptions even were prior to going in. I feel like I was so unaware and oblivious of the entire thing already.
Yeah, well, I think that that's really interesting because I think that that's how a lot of people look at it, where it's not something that people think about, but in reality, construction is always happening all around us. And like we were talking about earlier, the fallout of that has an impact on our food, on our water, on our communities. And also it's more than just like the thing that causes you a delay when you're driving to work because they're fixing something on the road. Like, I think it often is thought of as an afterthought. So that's already a super big change.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I find it funny, right? Because I'm, you know, the way we work, I'm looking at bids and tenders really around the province, from small sewer and water main culvert replacements all the way to, you know, $1 billion infrastructure projects. So, you know, I'll be driving down the street and I'll see the small crew doing some sewer and water main repair there, and really understanding why they're doing that and why that has to be done. In terms of how we're enabling this infrastructure for our cities to grow. Another project that we're proud to be on is the Ashbridges Bay Outfall project here in Toronto, where, you know, we see in the news and the articles every single year about the sewer overflow and backup, and then it all gets into Lake Ontario or Lake Erie, and we get the algae blooms, and that's always in the news every single year. And I don't know if people realize the infrastructure replacement that's going on year over year to try and fix that through engineering. So we have this huge project going on in Toronto right now where they're basically expanding, you know, our sewer outfall or our stormwater sewer outfall to prevent that from happening in the future. And, you know, your tax dollars are going into this, into all these projects that we're sitting around. And again, people are kind of oblivious to the work that's going on around them and also the impact to the economy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. So you mentioned that Soil Flow 2.0 just came out this year. So I know that this might be a presumptuous question, but, you know, 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, what's your hope for Soil Flow and for what it can do for the industry?
Yeah, I love that question. I don't know if many people even know this, but Soil Flow, what we're going for is we want to be everything that has to do with soil on your work site or below grade, right? So we're less concerned about, you know, tracking the trucks and the logistics of the trucks. We're concerned about, you know, site delineation. We're concerned about optimizing your soil reuse, having significant cost savings on, you know, optimizing the disposal of soil, and really just focusing on that job site, whether it is the generating site of soil or the receiving site of soil. Mm-hmm. And I'll kind of just leave it as a teaser.
Very nice. Well, I'm looking forward to following along with Soil Flow over the next few years to see what else you have coming up. This is like a reference back to something you said at the very beginning of the podcast, but sure. I want to know, because I don't know, what is a fill site?
Okay, yeah. So a fill site, you know, a fill site is essentially anywhere where we need to bring in soil for any reason. And that ranges from we're rehabilitating a pit and quarry, we're building, you know, 5,000 detached homes on farmland where we need to raise the elevation of that land. So we're bringing in soil. That's where all the dozers are, to bring it back to you guys. And, or it can be, you know, for any of these LRT projects, it can be raising the grade of that land in order to build the facilities there as well. So it really ranges, but anywhere that we're bringing soil to.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like that makes sense, but I figured you brought it up, so I wanted to ask.
No, it's a good question.
So what is your favorite thing about soil?
My favorite thing about soil. Okay, let me think about that one for a second. I feel like I love all aspects of it. I think people don't realize kind of the complexity in the earth moving industry. You know, you don't just have clean or contaminated soil, but there's a whole range between clean and contaminated. You know, I think I love that, you know, our environmental engineers and even our regulators have done a really amazing job at creating tools to allow you to beneficially reuse it in a really smart and appropriate way. Whereas, you know, if I'm building a parking lot, I don't need the most clean soil to come in as the base for that parking lot. I can bring in slightly contaminated soil. So really, to me, it's really just the complexity in it in terms of all the different ways it can be used based on contamination or geotechnical quality.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Yeah, I didn't think about that, but that's true. I guess it only needs certain soil for specific things.
Yeah, we're really just scratching the surface on the complexities there, but
yeah. So how big of a team are you now at Soil Flow?
Right now we are a team of 5. So we have 3 on the product development side of things who are working away day in and day out, getting those products out for our customers. And then 2 on the business development side of things where we try to cover a lot of ground and keep it pretty lean.
Nice. And what has that been like for you as a co-founder trying to build a company from like the culture side and trying to hire good people? Like, what does that look like for you?
We're really just learning as we go here, to be totally honest with you. I think we've been really lucky in the people that we've brought on have been an amazing fit for our culture. Having said that, you know, we're still really small, so I don't think we've gotten into any of the growing pains on the HR side of things or on managing people. It's been pretty easy, especially I can't even imagine what it would be like having a bigger team kind of in this pandemic and, you know, what those has to deal with kind of leaving the office and everyone working remotely. But I think really time's going to tell on that.
Yeah, I know. Cause our team has grown a lot even over the past year. It's like crazy how fast that happens, but I kind of came on when the team was smaller. But I think it's important to think about too, like you said, like the foundations of what you start building your team with, it reverberates as you do start to grow. So it's easier to manage now for sure, but I'm sure it will have an impact down the line as Soil Flow does grow.
Yeah, it's definitely something that we have top of mind and that we think about every single day. So any tips you have, feel free to send them over.
What is the most important thing for you as, maybe you don't think of yourself as a leader, but you are a leader in the company. What is the most important thing for you when you're trying to lead your team?
I have a pretty transparent outlook on life with my team, with my customers, with, you know, any of my business partners. You know, it's just being open and being honest with each other, whether that has to do with the deliverables that we're trying to get out the door, that we're trying to get for our customers, the service we can provide, or really, you know, the health of the company and where we're going with it. So to me, I feel like as long as I'm being open and transparent with my team, with my customers and with my business partners, then, you know, that's really, for me, the foundation of success. And it's been so important, you know, in these growing phases to learn and collaborate and to, you know, have that open door policy.
Yeah. And I think that that's a maybe not a new foundation, but it's something that you hear about a lot that companies are trying to adapt if they haven't already been focusing on that transparency piece. So I think that that's great that you're trying to do that right from the very start. And I'm sure that your customers appreciate it too.
Yeah, I love my customers. I'm not going to lie. You know, I get excited when they call me, and I don't just mean, you know, the owners of the businesses, but I get calls from the people in the field. I visit them all the time to get out of the office. I appreciate their feedback. Almost every single SoilFlow user right now, and there is a pretty substantial amount of them, have my direct phone number. So I'll get calls from people at any given day or at any given time in the day, and they'll give me a call about either a problem they're having or it's just some feedback on the platform.
That will be an iconic day when you go, okay, I have to stop doing this because I'm getting way too many phone calls now.
Well, it's funny because, you know, the dirt world, we start at 6 a.m. usually. It's later in the winters, earlier in the summers. But we were joking around because the other day I got a call. And, you know, often the calls wake me up and I just kind of snap out of bed. I answer the call, help them out. So this one came in and I was kind of in a daze and I went and I helped them out and I looked at my phone and by the time I hung up, it was 4:55 in the morning.
Oh,
I was like, whoa, that one was a record breaker right there.
Yeah, so, you don't need an alarm clock, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So it's definitely interesting, but it's fun.
Nice. Well, that's the key. You have to enjoy what it is that you're doing, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So if you could tell our audience one thing about Soil, I mean, I know you've already said your favorite about it and everything, but if there's anything else, what would you want to tell them?
I don't know exactly what I'd want to tell them. I'd tell them to start looking out for it, see if they notice it a little bit more. Look out for those triaxle dump trucks on the highway. It's always fun when you get back on the road to count the number of trucks you pass. At least it is for me. And, you know, think about the hard work and thought that's gone into really building the cities that you're driving on, the buildings you're standing in and the condos, because it's a lot of hard work and labor by a lot of people who are really, you know, dedicated to their trade when it comes to building, you know, even the 401. If you think about it, that was an enormous project. Right now, there's huge 401 expansion going on between, you know, the Waterloo corridor and Toronto. So, you know, just keep an eye out for it and start to notice it a bit.
Yeah, that's awesome. Is there anything else you wanted to leave our audience with today at all, Kevin?
No, that's it. I mean, I hope everyone enjoyed. I hope they all learned something. And, you know, if anyone wants to find out a little bit more, feel free to reach out.
Yeah. What is your social handle or do you want to give a shout out to your website so people know where they can find you for more information?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so you can find me on LinkedIn, Kevin Goldberg. Website's soilflow.com, SOILFLO. If you fill out any of the forms on SoilFlow, they also all go to my direct inbox. So that's always a way to reach out.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I don't want to speak for you, but I had a great time chatting. It was awesome learning more about the environmental connection to the construction industry, and I definitely learned a lot about soil.
Great. Happy you enjoyed. I had a lot of fun. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Okay. Thanks, Kevin.
All right. Talk soon.
Thanks so much to Kevin for joining us in today's episode. Dirt Stories is produced by Dozer, the leading software solutions provider for e-commerce and the equipment rental industry. Whether you're a contractor looking to explore available rentals on the Dozer marketplace, or you're a rental company looking for e-commerce software for your website, Dozer has the solution for you. Visit dozer.com for more info. You can follow along with Dirt Stories wherever you get your podcasts, and Dirt Stories is now available on IGTV, so you can check us out there too. At Dozer Hub is our social channel if you want to keep tabs on everything else happening over here at Dozer. And if you or someone you know has a dirt story worth sharing, you can send us a message at dirtstories@dozer.com to get in touch with our team. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.